You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji.
Good morning, everybody. In a little while, we're going to be talking about the difficulties families have when there's a diagnosis of bipolar disorder in very young children. A little knowledge can be a dangerous thing. Families are coping with it, the medication and the treatment. We want to know if you're having this experience. Give us a call. Tell us what the challenges are in your life. We'd love you to be involved in the conversation. Also, we have full coverage of the turning on of the Super Collider over in Europe. Some have said the world may end by the creation of small black holes, but put on your apocalyptic hack. What do you think? We've already had some great responses. If you knew the world were ending tomorrow or in a month, you know, what business would you take care of? Would you clean the garage? What would you do? Tell us at 877-8-MY-TAKE or email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org. And now our continuing coverage of the Super Collider turn-on continues. We go now to a location underground near Geneva, Switzerland.
Get set, go! Throw the second switch! Throw the third switch!
Not the third switch.
Throw it, I say! Throw it!
All right, I'm lying. We're not live near Geneva. That was from the movie Young Frankenstein. But the tension couldn't be more electric for scientists working at a vast underground complex beneath the European Alps. The experiment began today. Actually, the testing for an ambitious experiment began today, which could unravel the mystery of how the universe started billions of years ago. Researchers deep underground near Geneva fired subatomic particles at close to the speed of light around a 27-kilometer circular tunnel. They're trying to recreate the conditions just after the Big Bang. And joining us now is BBC science correspondent Tom Fielden. He's there at CERN, the Center for Nuclear Research, for the launch and joins us on the line. Thanks for joining us, Tom.
You're welcome.
You know, this is a really important moment in physics. A whole lot of propositions that have been argued about incessantly for a generation could conceivably be tested. What was it like when you were there this morning?
Oh, it really was fantastically exciting here. First beam, as they call it, the first attempt to get protons round the machine, was achieved about 3 hours ago, and there was raucous applause here in a packed control room. Things had been a little tense up to that point. There was a problem with a cooling system, and that had really threatened to derail the whole launch of the LHC, the Large Hadron Collider, this machine. But after a few false starts, they finally got the beam up and running. And as we speak, protons are circulating round the machine at the moment, and they're even talking about getting a second stream going in the other direction, which really is way ahead of schedule.
Explain a little bit to us the science of actually the machine itself. I mean, the magnetics that are required to keep the beam of protons in a straight line, the monitoring of the beam, and the computers required for taking care of all of the complicated and very, very precise electronics here. That's a scientific achievement in itself.
It really is. They're describing it as one of the great achievements of engineering, and a lot of original physics has had to go into those achievements along the way. They've got a 27-kilometer-long tunnel here with two tubes in it, one firing protons in one direction and one firing them in the other, and they're at four strategic locations along this tube. Those streams of protons, billions of protons, get crossed, smash into each other head-on, and that's where you get the exciting new physics that this is all about. But just building the machine, 6,000, I think, of these dipole magnets, all in a huge circle going around for 27 kilometres, has been a phenomenal achievement of engineering.
Now, the size of the machine isn't simply to impress the protons. You actually need that size to create the energy levels that approach the early moments after the Big Bang, correct?
That's right. This is all about getting those protons flying around this ring at really within, I think, about 20 kilometers an hour of the speed of light. That's how fast they have to get them, so that when they smash into each other head-on, the amount of energy released is enough to create particles that haven't been seen in the universe since the Big Bang. We're talking about getting back, winding the clock back, winding the film back, if you like, to a point 1/1,000,000,000th of a second after the Big Bang.
And that was before the BBC existed, actually, if such a thing can be imagined. Right. Now, one of the, for all the people who are out there saying, so who cares about this and why does it matter to me? There's actually one professor, Peter Higgs, whose name was given to an elusive particle which, if the supercollider finds it, will transform our view of gravity. He has visited the site of the supercollider with you. How emotional do you think this moment is for him?
It was certainly very emotional when he was here in April. He's quite an old man now. I think he's in his 80s, Peter Higgs. He's an Edinburgh physicist who came up with a solution, if you like, a theoretical mathematical solution to a gap in our knowledge about the most basic and fundamental level of the material world. And he came up with this idea, and people thought, well, that's just unprovable, we can't test that. You know, and for 20 years, people didn't really take it very seriously. But slowly, over time, people have begun to take that idea much more seriously. And this machine is in huge part been built to try and answer that question. Does the Higgs boson, as it was named after him, exist? And if it does it solve this missing link, if you like, in what they call the standard model of particle physics, which really tells us all about the interrelationships going on in the subatomic world and what matter is really made of?
Right. Now, Tom, I know you're a keen observer in the scientific world, and I noticed that the CERN facility is below ground there. Above ground there on the border between Switzerland and France, it's farmland, right?
It is wonderful, beautiful countryside right here. We've got the Alps on one side, got the Jura Mountains on the other. We're in a lovely valley here.
Now, when the particles actually reach the moment that they're smashed and the particles are created around the early moments after the Big Bang, do you suspect the cows are going to like behave any differently up on the surface? Will they chew differently?
We did have one report. A man's wife phoned him here and said the dog is now barking at the ground in a very unusual way. And he did say, well, the tunnel goes right under my house, so maybe there's something in that. But no, I mean, what's going on here is happening hundreds of feet underground, and it is contained in this tunnel and then the four experimental sites, these huge detectors that have been built to monitor what flies off from this moment of impact. But we shouldn't know too much
black
about
holes,
it on the surface.
No black holes in the milk. Black holes in the milk. Tom Fielden, BBC's science correspondent, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Tom Fielden was there for the turning on of the super collider near Geneva. And now headlines from Femi Okeng.
Thanks, John. Just coming up to 20 minutes to the top of the hour.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.